Hi, folks. Doug McBurney here. Keeping Bob Enyart live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And now is that time, and he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Bob's presence on the mighty 50,000 watt KLT in Denver gives him the ability to promote godly ideas on the terrestrial airwaves. I'm asking you to call right now or go online to purchase any or all of Bob's eye-opening Christian resources available in written, audio, or video formats. Call 1-800-8-ENYART right now or go to kgov.com and come alongside Bob's vital ministry and keep Bob broadcasting for another year. That's 1-800-8-ENYART or go to kgov.com, kgov.com right now to give Bob the essential support that only you can offer.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
This is part two of our analysis of the Ken Ham, Bill Nye debate on creation.
From what I understand, there was 5 million viewers of this debate on YouTube, and it's called the second Scopes trial, right?
Oh, that's
Scopes
right.
Scopes 2.
Yeah, the Scopes monkey trial, and Hollywood finally got that one right. They did the old Inherit the Wind, which was a complete farce as compared to the actual trial transcript. Well, now there's a movie called Alleged with a lot of leading actors in it.
Brian Dennehy, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. And Colin Meaney, Star Trek, and Fred Thompson, and Ashley Johnson from The Avengers and The Help. Mm-hmm. And so, Fred, that movie was produced by Fred Foote, who's been on this show, producer, writer of Alleged. And so this is now Scopes 2 with Ken Ham and Bill Nye, the creation evolution debate. And so we'd like to continue our audio clips and responding to things that Bill Nye had said.
Yeah, and we'll get to things that Ken Ham, frankly, didn't have time to get to.
Yeah.
So, for starters, I'd like to talk about how he said America will fall behind if we have a lot of us creationists.
Oh, that's right. What a crisis that would be. All right, let's hear it.
And I remind you, taxpayers and voters that might be watching, if we do not embrace the process of science, I mean in the mainstream, we will fall behind economically. This is a point I can't say enough.
Right. Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Fred, this is a canard. We have on our website a list of technologies, and we've been asking evolutionists for years, which one of these inventions, technologies requires what? Darwinism? The Big Bang? They've never suggested not a one.
Yeah. And Ken Ham asked the same question on the debate, right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And so at our website, realscienceradio.com/technologies, you'll see a list beginning with light bulbs and vacuums and pasteurization and railways and typewriters and going all the way up through the MRI and the Ethernet and plasma TVs and MP3 players and flash drives.
So we didn't need evolution to do all these technologies.
100 technologies, inventions, and we link to many, many more.
Yeah.
And you don't need that for any of them. But here's the bigger rebuttal to what Bill Nye is saying. America has the most creation activity in the world. And we're leading the world in science and technology. So how could it be bad when the country that has the most young earth creationism also has always led the world in science and technology?
Yeah.
That's a non sequitur.
Absolutely.
So the next clip has to do with how many species were on the ark, and then how many species are in the world. And he gets the number quite wrong, the number of species in the world that's estimated, but close enough for government work? I don't know. Let's hear it.
So let's see. If there are 4,000 years since Ken Ham's flood, and let's say, as he said many times, there are 7,000 kinds. Today, the very, very lowest estimate is that there are about 8.7 million species, but a much more reasonable estimate is it's 50 million or even 100 million when you start counting the viruses and the bacteria and all the B beetles that must be extant in the tropical rainforest that we haven't found. So we'll take a number which I think is pretty reasonable, 16 million species today. Okay? If these came from 7,000 kinds, that's, let's say we have 7,000 subtracted from 15 million, that's 15,993. We have 4,000 years, we have 365 and a quarter days a year. We would expect to find 11 new species every day.
Right, stop the
so
tape.
You go out
stop
into your
the
yard,
tape.
You wouldn't just.
Okay. So there's his argument. You got 7,000 species survive on the ark. Mm-hmm. And today you got at least 9 million, really 16 million, maybe 50 million. And so you have to have this species explosion. So to talk through that, first of all, his numbers are wrong. When he says at the minimum there's 9 million species, in fact, I had a paper published on Theodosius Dobzhansky.
Yeah, Creation Research Society.
The 40th anniversary of his famous paper, Nothing in Biology Makes Sense Except in the Light of Evolution. And so in that paper, I reference the journal Nature. And they say, you know, there's been so much research in rainforest, and we're expecting to find this extraordinary diversity of undiscovered species. And there's a lot of downward pressure on the number of species that may be in the world, because we're finding a lot, but nowhere near what we thought.
Mm-hmm.
And the best estimate of known species is published online. It's a very authoritative survey funded by the Australian government, Chapman 2009, easy to find. There is a total known number of species of 1.9 million.
So that's a little off from his 16 million that he wants to use.
Right. Well, he said, just for start with, he said at least 8.8 million that we know of, and it probably 16 million is conservative.
Yeah, and there's still a lot more serious problems, but yeah, that's interesting. He's way off on that.
Yeah, so it's not 9 million, it's 1.9 million.
Yep.
And the final number might be double that. It might be 10 times that, because we don't yet know. But the pressure is downward. The estimates are being revised downward because of all the intense research done over the last decades.
What I find interesting is that you listed 18,000 existing species that they're finding annually, right?
18,000 new are, that's
right.
They're
being identified. And so if you do the math on that, which I did right before our show, that's 49 new ones a day. If you're finding them at that rate, wouldn't that also be in the, you know, maybe be in the news, the press? And,
yeah, right. And, he says, "How imagine 11 new species every day." Instead, they are finding 50 new ones every day that they actually are.
Yeah.
So what's that objection? That's confusing.
You know, if you get down to what's really wrong with his argument, first of all, I remember when listening to the debate, he mentioned bacteria. Now, I don't recall Noah walking two bacteria on a leash onto the ark. Okay, maybe he has a bunch of Petri dishes, okay?
Okay, but, so we said that Bill Nye has serious misunderstanding of his opponent's major aspects of their model. So he's totally confused about the ark. He thinks all the bacteria had to walk two by two onto the ark. He thinks the same thing with fish.
And bacteria wouldn't have to be two by two, right? Because they're asexual.
That's
just one
true.
By one.
Yeah, exactly. And he thinks the same thing with fish.
Yeah.
He mentions fish.
Yeah. Why would fish need
fish
to be on the ark?
We're not on the ark.
Yeah.
They were in the sea.
The earth wasn't covered with dirt. It was covered with water.
Right. He kept saying that the trees would be buried underwater for a year. How could they survive? I mean, it's such a child's perspective on his opposition. Seeds float. The trees that were underwater, they were destroyed, for one, like in Mount St. Helens.
Mm-hmm.
And no, they did not survive. But seeds did survive on the ark, undoubtedly millions of seeds in the food and all and in the animals. And the seeds that floated then are the seeds that began to replant the continents.
Yeah, that's right. And another one he mentioned, what about insects? Did Noah have to walk a couple cockroaches onto the ark?
No. No, in fact, the Bible says the land animals and the birds that fly in the air, those that breathe through their nostrils. So insects, they have these tubes, but they don't have nostrils. You can't kill insects, never mind trying to save them intentionally. And again, there would have been millions of insects on the ark.
And Noah would have absolutely refused. He's not going to bring houseflies onto the ark.
Yeah, that's right. So there's confusion about that. And Bill Nye's confused and thinking you have to go from 7,000 species on the ark up to 16 million or 50 million. You don't. And so all the bacteria, microorganisms, all the fish, all the insects are excluded. And what's on the ark is just really four different kinds of animals: reptiles, amphibians, birds, and mammals. And that's it. And Fred, remember we did a show on this recently, the number of animals on the ark. In fact, you could get to it at realscienceradio.com/animals on ark.
Yeah, that's right. And the number of kinds of animals that we needed to have on the ark that we estimate based on some creation studies.
You have some of those numbers. How many reptiles had to be on the ark? Because not every species, but the kinds and the families that then as they breed, they express their genetic diversity.
You'd have to have 320 reptile kinds on the ark.
So 320 now, pairs.
For me, it would have been 319. I would have left the snakes out.
But, okay. You know. All right. And then amphibians, 70 pairs of amphibians. Yep. And this research, we've talked about this. We did a show with Dr. Georgia Purdom, a microbiologist at Answers in Genesis. They are going through all the species of these reptiles, amphibians, birds, and mammals. They're going through the genus and the families, the orders. They're looking at things like which can reproduce and have fertile offspring and so on. And so that's where these numbers are coming from. Birds, how many bird pairs had to be on the ark?
300.
300 pairs of birds. And then of mammals, 240 are required. And those are either genus or family.
So when you add those up, it's roughly 1,000 kinds of animals.
About 1,000, and then the seven of each of the clean animals for sacrificing after the flood, in part.
Yeah, and John Woodmaramp had originally estimated 7,000, but he was being very conservative.
Which he said
he admitted
at the time
that
in his feasibility study of Noah's Ark.
And even with the 7,000, you'd only need about 15% of the ark space for those animals.
For housing.
You'd have plenty of room for all the food store and whatnot.
Right, a lot of whatnot.
Yeah, that's right.
So then there's the question of the ark design. Remember that he said it would have twisting and all. You and I have talked about the design of the ark and how the dimensions given in the Bible seem to be extraordinarily perfect for a seagoing vessel.
That's right. South Korean ship architects modeled the ark using the dimensions in the Bible.
This is a world-renowned ship
architects,
engineering firm,
and they said it's built perfectly for stability.
Yeah,
it wasn't built for speed, okay,
right,
but it was built for stability.
You didn't have
to
steer it.
That's right. And if you look at all the ancient stories of the flood, what do you get there? You get flood legends of an ark that most of the time wasn't seaworthy, right? All the time, you don't have any credible accounts other than the Bible.
200 accounts of a flood that wiped out the animals. Some people were saved in some kind of boat, but the Bible's account is the historic one that, for example, has the credible dimensions of a seaworthy vessel.
That's right.
Then there's the rapid diversification. He was saying, hey, what, we're going to have 11 new species every day? Turns out there's 50 discovered every day. And it's hard to say whether they've been there all along or they have recently diversified.
That's right. You know, we've talked about on the show about examples of rapid evolution. We put that in quotes.
Yeah.
Evolution that goes too fast can't have possibly happened by the way they want it to, which is mistakes in the DNA coupled with some blind selection. That can't happen over a few generations. For them, they admit, they know that that has to happen over millions and millions of years, over many, many, many generations.
Right. So you constantly have these science articles, peer-reviewed papers, evolution going along at light speed. Look, we looked at this creature. We looked at these fish. We looked at this lizard. We looked at these finches. And they evolved so quickly, it's shocking. They evolved in like 17 years or since 1971. And we should give some examples. But what we see, like you just said, is not waiting around for random mutations to accumulate until you have some kind of a new species, but pre-programmed diversity in the genome that's then expressed in response to the environment.
Yeah, and there's a paper, a report in last April 2013 that we were looking at before the show of rapid evolution in mites that was way too fast for them. And they said it was due to environmental pressures.
In mites?
In mites. So environmental pressure. So, hey, you get all these kinds of animals off the ark. They're going to migrate to different areas. There's going to be different environmental pressures.
Right.
And you can easily get all the different types of animals we have today in that period of time.
Let's give a couple examples, like a recent study of lizards that were on one island, these Italian lizards. Buongiorno. These lizards, they fed on insects. And they moved seven of them to another island that didn't have the same insect population. And they had to force themselves to become vegetarian. And so their digestive system dramatically changed. I mean, it ended up with new parts of their gut. And they said, well, look at this. This is evolution in light speed. It's not evolution. Just as recently with the bacteria that's able to feed on the citrates, this is pre-programmed capability that there are genetic switches that can turn it on or off. And that's why we have this rapid diversification. And it seems to be everywhere.
So I remember before the show started, you mentioned plants.
Botanists have figured out, Fred, that you could take plants that are just nice 3-foot tall plants and plant them in a different habitat, like especially island habitats, and they grow into trees. Woody bark, trunks of trees. And they say, how can this be? This is a plant. But within the genome, there is all this information that it could be expressed in different ways. This is what's found over and over and over, that there are genetic switches that could be turned on or off. Sometimes they're permanent. Once they're switched, that's it. There's no going back.
That's right. And if you remember Darwin's favorite bird, the finch.
Yeah,
Galapagos. The scientists who've studied the finches, they say they've evolved rapidly. And again, way too fast for natural selection and mutations to do it.
Didn't it take thousands of years, those finches?
It didn't take thousands of years.
Down there,
30 years.
The Grants, right? Mr. and Mrs. Grant are studying these finches. And they've got like so many new species. And it happened in just a few decades.
That's right. Now, you know, Noah did make one mistake on the ark as far as the diversity thing.
What?
Well, he let the unicorn off first, and then he let the lions off. And so,
okay.
But then he kind of figured it out, you know, and he realized he got to release these in the right order.
Fred, there's also fish that we've talked about on the show where if there are no predators in the lake, they only lay a few eggs and those offspring mature slowly. You introduce a predator into the lake and within a generation, they're laying many eggs and the young mature quickly. Big change.
Yeah, huge.
So changes like that are in response to the environment. And so that's how there was rapid speciation after these thousand or so kinds got off the ark, because all this diversity is programmed in. It's not accidental.
And we have to remember, too, that speciation, it's a man-made classification system. So, for example, we've got something like 15 North American jackrabbit species.
Mm.
Well, you know, they're classified as different species because they got separated population-wise, so they developed different mating habits.
Right.
So, over time, they don't interbreed, and so they classify them as different species. But they've also discovered if you put them back together, over time, they figure it out again, and they get back in sync, and what do you know? They're interbreeding.
Yeah.
But they've already been classified as separate species.
Sure, right.
And so you get all kinds of examples of that, too.
Yeah. Next one, I don't think we need the quote for this, but remember Bill Nye said that the reason the inner Earth is still hot, because if the Earth is 4.6, 4.55 billion years old, it should have cooled down by now. But he has a rescue device, radioactivity in the inner Earth. Problem is, we had one of the world's most famous physicists on this show who's an atheist and an evolutionist. You remember his name?
Yeah, Lawrence Krauss.
Right. And he agreed with us. I mean, our bookcases almost fell over when he agreed.
Yeah.
But he did agree that almost all of the Earth's radioactivity is in the crust of the Earth. It's not deep in the Earth. In fact, it's almost all in the continental
crust. The continental crust.
90% of it.
Yep.
So there is not the radioactivity in the core, in the liquid outer core, to keep the inner Earth
so hot.
I don't
think he realized how convenient that fact is for us creationists.
Yeah, because as Bill Nye had said, we know where all this uranium and thorium and all the elements, they're our friends, you know. We know where they all came from. They came from stars. Well, if stars produced all these heavy elements, then you'd expect to find them mixed up sort of evenly through at least the mantle of the Earth and the crust of the Earth, the oceanic crust. Mm-hmm. You don't. Radioactive minerals are preferentially located not only in the crust, but in the continental crust.
Yes.
And not only there, but preferentially near granite. And we did a whole show on Earth's radioactivity. And if anybody wants to find out why radioactivity is near the granite, just go to /radioactivity.
So you mean rsr.org/radioactivity.
That'll work. That's a shortcut, right?
Yep.
RealScienceRadio.rsr.org. Yeah, me too. Okay, so Fred, next one, we got a clip about kangaroos. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Should we hear that one?
One of the extraordinary claims associated with Mr. Ham's worldview is that this giant boat, very large wooden ship, went aground safely on a mountain in the Middle East, what we now call the Middle East. And so places like Australia are populated then by animals who somehow managed to get from the Middle East all the way to Australia in the last 4,000 years. Now, that to me is an extraordinary claim. We would expect then, somewhere between the Middle East and Australia, we would expect to find evidence of kangaroos. We would expect to find some fossils, some bones. In the last 4,000 years, somebody would have been hopping along there and died along the way, and we'd find them. And furthermore, there is a claim that there was a land bridge that allowed these animals to get from Asia all the way to the continent of Australia, and that land bridge has disappeared. Has disappeared in the last 4,000 years. No navigator, no diver, no U.S. Navy submarine. No one's ever detected any evidence of this, let alone any fossils of kangaroos. So your expectation is not met. It doesn't seem to hold up.
All right. Let's respond to that, Fred. Kangaroos, fossils,
and land bridges.
Land bridges.
Yep. So first of all, kangaroos, they don't do well with predators, so they're going to be migrating, I think, fairly rapidly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't find any kangaroo bones along the way to Australia. Well, first of all, it's very rare to find a vertebrate fossil in the first place. If you do, you make a lot of money.
95% of the fossil record is shallow marine organisms like corals and shellfish.
Yeah, yep.
And the rest of the 5%, 95% of that is algae and plants.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a little tiny
0.01% or something.
And the rest of it, Fred, is invertebrates and insects. The vast majority of that, like 95% of the remainder. And you're getting down to a tiny fraction, which are vertebrates. And almost all of them are fish.
And most of the time, those species are represented by a bone or less. So when you find a vertebrate fossil, again, it's very rare. But, hey, I got a question, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, so buffalo didn't do too well against predators either, humans.
Bison in America. Yeah. North America.
Yeah. So do we find a lot of bones in Kansas, Nebraska?
No.
I haven't heard reports of finding buffalo bones.
Yeah.
So if you remember, there were millions of buffaloes killed, all kinds of buffaloes, and we're not finding bones
pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
What Bill Nye is forgetting is in the creation model, virtually all the fossil record was during the flood. So it's after the flood, there are fossils formed, but it's extremely intermittent. And like you said, there's a tremendous rarity of mammal fossils.
That's right. And I encourage the audience to just go do a search on Google for kangaroo fossils in Australia. And even there, it'll say that it's extremely rare.
Extremely rare. Then, Fred, the idea of a land bridge, well, our global flood seminar in Indianapolis, we're producing a DVD version of that right now. We showed an animation of, as sea level rose, just in historic times, land bridges all over the world were covered, as indicated in the book of Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
In the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. The land was divided. And we know that there were coastal settlements all over the world that are now submerged.
That's right. Coastal settlements where people lived.
Yeah. City, towns, settlements.
They don't live there now.
Right. And
there's
we've been to a number of them in Europe and in the Middle East, Asia. And right. So as sea level rose, then these land bridges were covered.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why he's befuddled by that idea, including in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, but Bob, isn't it more shallow in that part of the world, in Indonesia? Yes. From what I remember looking at satellite maps.
Southeast Asia, going down to New Zealand and Australia. Right. In our animation, which will be on our DVD of the Global Flood, you see that that's one of the last parts that are submerged.
Yep.
So, of course, there were land bridges there. Okay, then we should speed up a bit. Freddie mentioned tree rings. Right? Remember?
Oh, 60? Yeah. We had a show on that on the bristlecone pine.
We do. And just go to realscienceradio.com/trees.
Yeah. And trees that are happen to be in like the outer edges of a forest or in a more arid area, they grow more tree rings per year.
They do, because when a tree is in crisis, it produces multiple rings per year. We know this from laboratory settings of actual research. And when you look at the bristlecone pine and the White Mountains of California, it's one of the most arid places on Earth. These trees are in constant crisis. That's why the trees with the most rings are in places like that instead of in lush rainforests.
That's right.
And not only that, when they count up rings and they'll have 3-4 trees growing next to each other, you know what they never do? What they don't do is when the rings don't match, they don't say, oh, well, there must have been double rings here in this tree. They always say, oh, that tree must have skipped a ring.
Yep.
Never.
Good point.
For hundreds of double rings, they never say it's a double ring. They always say the other trees missed a ring, which cracks me up. Okay, so we're about out of time. There's so much more. Fred, I'd like to do more of this. Can we do another show on this?
Yeah, let's do another show.
Okay, but for right now, we got to wrap up. We've covered a handful of topics. In the first show, we talked about sexual reproduction, which is such an interesting topic because he claimed it was all proof for evolution.
I couldn't believe he used that as one of his evidences for evolution.
Yeah, when the evolutionists admit that it's a confounding mystery.
Yes.
And you know, Fred, you also need incredible compatibility. At the ecosystem level, they have to find each other. And then at the social level, the female has to be willing to put up with the male.
Yeah.
In the organ level, in the cellular level, in the electrical chemical level, in the genetic level, wild complexity, and how does it start?
Yeah.
How do you get a male and a female?
He just assumed it was true, then use it as evidence.
And how do they know what to do?
Circular reasoning.
It's really fun. All right. Thanks, Fred. Another great Real Science Radio program. At least I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did
Our
too.
Website, realscienceradio.com. We really need your help. And if you make a donation or buy one of our science materials to help our telethon, we'll give you as a gift, Evolution versus God, the great DVD from Ray Comfort. You'll love it. This is Bob Inyart and Fred Williams saying God bless you. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about. Hi, this is Bob Inyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-INYART. Mount St. Helens, the explosive evidence for catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-INYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.